The Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to the show. It is Monday morning, the start of another crazy week here, and we have got so much to talk about today. The webcam is running, chat room's open, all systems are go, and we're ready to rock and roll full tilt boogie for truth, justice, and what we used to call the American way. So, anyway, Donovan is in the control room twiddling our dials and keeping us out of trouble on the airwaves today. And our phone number is 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Getting right into the story, obviously, especially if you go over to CNBC and you just see them dancing around with the pom-poms, the Dow gained 221 points today. 221 points. The stocks rallied. The Dow is soaring. And investors are looking past the General Motors bankruptcy to focus on upbeat economic reports from other countries. And they're saying, wow, things are getting better in China. Buy American stocks now. Do you see this, China? See how our economy's rebounding. You can afford to buy more of our debt safely, really. Okay, what's going on here, very, very simply, is the Dow Industrial Averages very quietly reshuffled their roster of the indicator stocks that they use to calculate the index. They dropped Citibank. Sorry, I keep forgetting to turn that off. Okay, the Dow Industrials dropped Citibank, which is an underperforming stock right now because of the financial meltdown, and they replaced it with the Travelers Insurance Group, which is performing very well. And so, yeah, the stock market soars up way high. They did it, obviously, at a day when they needed to sort of distract from the fact that General Motors, which only a few months ago everybody was saying was too big to go into bankruptcy and too big to fail, well, it's in bankruptcy. 12 factories are closing. 20,000 auto workers just lost their jobs and careers. And meanwhile, Geithner is over in China trying to convince the Chinese that it's really kind of cool to go on buying U.S. debt. And he's not having a very good time over there because he gave a speech at the Beijing University. And when he made a statement to the effect that Chinese financial assets are very safe in the United States, apparently the entire auditorium broke into laughter. So much for inscrutable. So I think this whole idea about all the wonderful news reports and it's up here percentage, and we're back to the green shoots and the glimmer of hope and everything, because they're trying to convince the Chinese that things have hit, you know, we've hit the bottom, we're rebounding, we're heading back up. China can go on buying long-term treasury bonds. At the moment, they're only buying the three-year bonds. They're not touching the 30-year bonds. They don't want to get committed past 3 years. So they're being very, very cautious, and frankly, I think the Chinese are far too smart to fall for this very obvious charade of reshuffling the Dow roster to drive it up 200 points and then tap dancing around and saying, this is it. We're through the worst. We're heading back up. Because the bottom line is, we're seeing one of our biggest manufacturing facility companies just fold. They just crumpled. And, you know, Chrysler may come out of bankruptcy long enough to be sold to Fiat. Nobody is going to buy all these little statistical numbers that say the economy is rebounding. It just doesn't make sense. 20,000 auto workers out of work, 500,000 new jobless as of last month, over and above what was there before. The unemployment numbers are continuing to rise. They're up about 9% now officially. Officially, the real numbers are probably considerably higher. And remember, 25% unemployment is considered depression-level unemployment. And we know it's got to be close to that because the federal tax revenues have dropped 44% since last year. So something really bad is going on there. So Geithner's over there, and he's on his hands and knees and saying, please buy our debt. And the Chinese are saying, I don't know, we're not so sure anymore. All right, moving around here, a couple of small news stories, and I got some really serious stuff I want to talk into, but I wanted to get some of the smaller stuff out of the way here. First of all, for all of you global warming cultists who follow and worship at the feet of St. Al of the Gore, or as one of my readers calls him, the Goracle, it was snowing in New York last night. Upstate New York had snow, 1st of June. Chew on that one for a while. And so it's just getting weird out there. Now, this is kind of interesting. Milvina Dean, who as a months-old baby was wrapped in a sack and put into one of the lifeboats for the Titanic, died Sunday. She's the last of the surviving Titanic people from the 1912 sinking, and she was 97 years old. And it does represent the closing of that chapter of history, because there are no more survivors left from the Titanic. I actually got a chance to meet Melvina Dean many, many years ago when I was still working in Los Angeles, and I was working my way through college as a professional magician. And I was working at the Queen Mary, the ocean liner in Long Beach, not the Transvestite Club in Van Nuys. Big boat. And so I was working in the Magic Theater, and part of the ship was used for conventions, and they had a Titanic convention there. And Melvina was one of the guests of honor. And so in between shows, I got a chance to walk up there, because I'm a history buff, and Titanic, and especially when you're working on one of those ships, you just, there is such an immediate identification with what happened on the Titanic, because you're working in an environment that looks very, very, very similar to what was going on in the Titanic. So I got a chance to meet her, and she was a very lovely lady. And sorry that she's gone, but 97 years, it's a good run. Can't really complain about that. Now, in the realm of the extraordinarily weird, just when you think it can't get any more bizarre out there within our government, a former state Senate staffer has been arrested on charges for soliciting a 15-year-old boy to have sex with him while the Senate staffer was dressed in a panda costume. Alan David Berlin, 40, who worked for Jane Orry, Republican from Allegheny, used internet chats and instant messages to proposition the Harrisburg area boy, including talking about dressing up in animal costumes and engaging in various sex acts.
That makes me a very sad panda.
And as we move right along here, I want to get into some more serious news here. And what we have is, I want to talk about a couple of things here. And the first thing I want to talk about is the concept of odious deaths, because for the last, well, what am I saying? 10, 20, 30 years. We've been watching the government of the United States borrow and spend and borrow and spend and borrow and spend and just presume that we, the American people, are financially liable for the debt. And we may not be. Now, there is in international law a theory called odious debt. This is a legal theory, and it has been used, which holds that the national debt incurred by a government for purposes that do not serve the interests of the nation, and they specifically mention wars of aggression, are not enforceable on the people. Such debts are considered to be personal debts of the government that incurred them, and not debts of the nation or the people. It is basically a continuation of the concept that contracts signed under coercion or under deceptive means cannot be enforced. Now, I've been joking around all the time about how the war in Iraq was illegal because President Bush lied to Congress in activating the congressional authorization for the use of force in Iraq in his letter of transmittal, March 19th, 2003. And I would go on and say, if the war is illegal, then it's a personal crusade by President Bush, and he should pick up the cost rather than the taxpayer. And don't worry, the Bush family's got lots of money. They got rich back when they were backing Hitler, and it'll only be a minor inconvenience for them. And so I joke about that, but apparently in international law, this is exactly what happens. If the government, the federal government, is borrowing money for purposes that are not consistent with taking care of the people of their nation, then those debts under international law can be construed as personal debts of the members of that government and not enforceable against we, the people. Now, as I said before, they specifically talk about wars of aggression. And when I posted this on my website the other day, I had somebody write in and say, well, how do you know these wars of aggressions are not in the best interest of the nation? And I said, well, very simple. Look at the history of the 20th century. Wars of aggression are ultimately lost by the nation that was the aggressor. And so it can't be in our best interest to be launching these things. We're going to take a break here for some commercials. 800-259-9231. We'll be right back.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
We will tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We're talking about the concept of odious debt, and this is something I think all Americans need to be very much aware of right now. This is the legal theory in international law. It has actually been used many times before. And the theory is that debts incurred by the government of a country that do not serve the interests of the people are not enforceable against the people. Now, this goes all the way back to 1927, a legal treatise by Alexander Nahum Sack, based upon 19th century precedents, such as Mexico's repudiation of all the debts incurred by Emperor Maximilian, and the denial by the United States of Cuban liability for its debts incurred by the Spanish colonial regime. So, in a nutshell, when a despotic regime contracts a debt which serves the purposes of the government and its favored cronies only, it is not in the interest of the state, but to strengthen itself, to suppress a popular insurrection, this debt is odious to the people of the entire state. And when that government falls, that debt cannot be enforced against the people. So what this means in a nutshell is, when the federal government of the United States falls, the accumulated financial debt for all the wars of aggression, going all the way back to Vietnam, none of which served the interests of the people, are not enforceable against the United States. Nor would be the some $12.8 trillion in debt incurred in the bailouts of the last several months, which very clearly the people of this country opposed by virtue of the 90% opposition to the phone calls, you know, in the phone calls going to Congress when TARP was passed. These loans have clearly benefited a select privileged class of elite and the government itself, and have been very much against the common good of the ordinary people. So it really comes down to something very simple. It is estimated right now that the total indebtedness of the federal government of the United States is about $65 trillion. Huge number. Comes out to over $500,000 for every American household. $500,000. Every household in America is on the hook for money that you and your children are expected to pay to the government to service this debt, for which you will receive absolutely nothing back in return. That's if the U.S. government continues. If the U.S. government collapses, then under the principle of odious debt, all of that evaporates. Whoever loaned the government that money, they get stuck for it, but hey, that's their decision that they made, and, you know, they've got the money to make those kind of loans, so it's not like they're going to miss any meals. But we, the American people, under the principle of international law called odious debt, we, the American people, once the federal government does not exist anymore, we are no longer liable for all the money the government has been borrowing, for all these wars of aggressions, for all of these bailouts, for all of these special, let's pile the money up on the rich people over here and take it away from the poor. All of that gets written off completely. There will be no new government forming and saying, oh, we are bound by honor to assume these debts. No, we are not. The debts are odious. We didn't agree to them. We didn't sign on to them. We didn't support them. They're not our problem. When the federal government collapses, which seems at this point pretty much inevitable, you and I and the rest of the taxpayers are off the hook for that portion of the debt that was not incurred to serve the best interests of the American people. Now, obviously, debts to build hospitals and schools and roadways and things like that, that is another matter entirely. And voluntary debt that we ourselves incurred to buy our homes and our cars and our businesses, that, of course, is a separate matter as well. But under the principle of odious debt, the overwhelming majority of federal government debt, which was incurred to fund wars of conquest, to strengthen the federal government, to basically bail out all these private businesses belonging to contributors, we're off the hook for that. And you need to keep that in mind when you start thinking about whether or not you should be supporting the federal government in what it's doing in the coming months, or whether you ought to be just standing back and saying, let's let history take its course. And obviously, I know what my choice is going to be. Because you and I could spend the rest of our lives, and our children could spend their lives trying to pay back this $65 trillion in debt the federal government seems to owe to a bunch of people. And at the end of that time, even if we were able to pay it off, and you know the Federal Reserve will never let us pay off the principal. Even if it were to be paid off, what are we left with for all that sacrifice? We're still left with the government that reads our emails, listens to our phone calls, raids our computers, watches us with TV cameras because they are so scared of us right now. They're so scared of us saying, we quit, we're not signing any more 1040 forms. That they're turning the United States of America into a new Gaza to make sure that we can't stampede on them. We're going to go to the phones. Tim in California. Aloha, Tim. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind?
Well, and that's what I was about ready to say. They ought to just stop filing 1040s and 1099s, and just if everyone just stopped, the wheel would come to a grinding halt.
Mm-hmm.
And once again, watch the movie Freedom to Fascism, and, mm-hmm. and they only really go after about 350 people a year strongly criminally. They estimate 66 or 70 million people already don't file taxes now, and so why don't all the rest of them just stop too? I mean, before you know it, you're not going to have any equity in your house, so if you stop filing and they tried to come after your house, guess what? They're going to assume a house with a bunch of debt on it because most people, the only money they have anyway is in the equity because they're up into their eyeballs in debt on their credit cards and everything else. Mm-hmm. And the only thing the government could get was their house. Well, let them get it because I got a mother with an 805 credit score who's golden, whose payment's going from $2,100 to $3,000 a month, and she's got gold credit, and she's going to walk away from the house. So when people with golden credit are walking away from their houses, everybody ought to just stop dead in their tracks and say, we've had enough, and just stop filing.
Okay, now here's the situation. Here's the situation, Tim. You need to keep something in mind. If the government, if the Internal Revenue Service comes and steals your home from you, okay, here's the problem. They don't get the debts with it. You still have those debts. Okay, you still have to make the payment on that mortgage, for the house the government has just taken. And you need to understand that when the government comes and takes your assets, any debts on those assets, you are still liable for it. It's the way the system is set up. It's a double whammy. I agree with you. I'm hearing from a number of sources, non-compliance with taxation has just gone right through the roof. And the whole system is grinding to a halt. And the reason it's happening is because the federal government, either through stupidity or through design, just decided they were going to go on looting the poor to give to the rich because that is, of course, the essence of fascism. It's also the essence of Marxism. But the difference between Marxism and fascism is in Marxism, when the rich make some money, they have to sort of spread it back over to the poor to keep them from rebelling. We don't have that here yet. That's why for all the talk about the Democrats being communists, it's not true. We are a fascist economy right now. Tim, we got to let you go. We're at the end of this segment. We got to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Are you tired of searching for great talk radio? Search no more. We are the GCN Radio Network.
What this country is coming to, I sure would like to know. If they don't do something, by and by, the rich will live and the poor will die. Doggone. I mean, the panic is on.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. We've been talking about odious debt. I had somebody email me real quick saying, is it really that stark a difference? If the federal government falls, well, if the federal government survives, we're on the hook for $500,000 per household. And if the federal government collapses, that just goes away. And yeah, more or less, that's pretty much the principle of odious debt. We, the people, did not agree to all of these wars. Of aggression. And wars of aggression are by default not for the benefit of the nation as a whole. Defensive wars are. But wars of aggression, no. That's designed to make military companies rich and to loot the attacked country for the benefit of the instigators of the war. And as I said before, wars of aggression are not to the benefit of the general benefit of the people of a nation, because throughout the 20th century, all of the major wars were lost by the country that was the aggressor, by the country that started it. All right, moving right along now, we've been talking a lot about the Federal Reserve. And we have been talking about the history of the Federal Reserve and the history, basically, of this ongoing battle between the original financial system of the United States, which was the U.S. Treasury issuing the money as a unit of value to assist in, as a medium of exchange to move commerce along. And this was money that we were allowed to use without having to pay for the usage of the money. The money itself had value. You know, you had to have a dollar's worth of value to get a dollar. But you weren't paying a fee to the government for the use of the currency. That is not true with the Federal Reserve. With the Federal Reserve or any central private bank issuing the public currency, there is a small fee attached to the usage of the money in the form of interest. And this is why Thomas Jefferson said, a private central bank issuing the public currency is a greater threat to the liberty of Americans than any foreign government. Now, just to really bring it back in brief, there have been many times where presidents in the past have said, okay, we're going to basically go back to the system we had in the start of the country. We're not going to let privately owned banks issue the banknotes. We, the American government, will issue the legal tender. Now, Abraham Lincoln issued his currency called the greenback to fund the Civil War because he did not want to enslave the American people to the 30% interest being demanded by the private bankers. Lincoln refused to plunge the people of the nation into a debt they could never pay back, and he issued his own currency. Direct quote, we gave the people of this republic the greatest blessing they've ever had, their own paper money to pay their own debts. Now, this was a huge threat to the private bankers, so much so, and I'm going to read you this quote. This is from the London Times. If that mischievous financial policy, which had its origins in the North American Republic, should become indurated down to a fixture, then that government will furnish its own money without cost. It will pay off debts and be without a debt. It will have all the money necessary to carry on its commerce. It will become prosperous beyond precedent in the history of the civilized governments of the world. The brains and the wealth of all countries will go to North America. That government must be destroyed, or it will destroy every monarchy on the globe. Because of Lincoln's greenbacks, because he said, I am going to run the business of the United States of America without the use of money issued by a private bank at interest, Great Britain and most of Europe sided with the Confederacy. Our good friends in Europe backed the Confederacy because they wanted to destroy Lincoln's greenbacks, currency that existed without the benefit of one of their private little banks issuing it. Now, as soon as Lincoln was assassinated, Congress repealed the greenback law, celebrating the end of slavery by re-enslaving all of America to the private banks. Another quote, the struggle that was to rid the country of human slavery of the black race, however, was also to fasten upon the whole nation an economic or money slavery, which has endured to the present time. Dr. R.E. Search in Lincoln, Money Martyred. Now, John F. Kennedy did pretty much the same thing. On June 4th, 1963, Kennedy signed Executive Order 11110, which authorized the U.S. Treasury to print up a new version of the silver certificate called the U.S. Note. This was a currency. It was worth a dollar's worth of silver. It went into circulation without needing to go through the privately owned Federal Reserve Bank. Kennedy issued some $4 billion of these notes. At that time, that was enough money to allow the nation to operate without having to go through the network of private reserve, Federal Reserve banks. Remember, the Federal Reserve is a private bank. It's not part of the government. It's no more federal than Federal Reserve. Just 5 months after signing this executive order, John F. Kennedy was shot to death by the crazed lone nut Lee Harvey Oswald, and almost immediately after his assassination, the U.S. notes were pulled out of circulation and destroyed, except for samples in the hands of collectors. Shortly thereafter, the real silver in our coinage started being phased out. And I got a lot of people saying, oh, come on, it had nothing to do with the monetary system. Oh, really? Go back and look at the membership of the Warren Commission. There were seven members. One of them was John J. McCloy, past president of the World Bank, past president of Chase Manhattan Bank. Why is a banker on a commission intending to investigate a murder unless there is a financial dimension to it we are not being told about? Now, here's the important part, and you need to listen to this part real carefully. Kennedy's executive order, 11110, authorizing the Treasury to print up new currency based on silver without going through the Federal Reserve, was never rescinded. To rescind that executive order would have taken an act of Congress, and in the atmosphere of near deification of John F. Kennedy following his assassination, that would have brought a lot of public attention onto that executive order, and people would have said, why is he trying to do this? And did this have anything to do with the conspiracy to have him killed? So Kennedy's executive order is still in effect. And what that means is, if Barack Obama really had it in his soul to fix the U.S. economy for the benefit of the American people, he would just pick up that telephone, or he'd walk through that little tunnel that goes from that bookcase just to the west of his desk in the Oval Office over to the Treasury building, and he'd say, crank up those printers, boy. Crank up those printing presses and start getting that money out there. Because we already know from past history that a value-based currency that is not representing an obligation to private banking interests is the fastest way to revive the economy of a nation. Obama does not need an act of Congress. He doesn't even need to sign a new executive order. Kennedy's executive order is still in effect. All Obama has to do is say, I'm activating it. I am reactivating it. We're putting this to work for the benefit of the American people. The executive order still stands. President Obama has the authority right now, today, to pick up the phone and start issuing new U.S. notes based on some unit of value. Silver, gold, you know, even copper and zinc these days have got enough value to be used as a monetary unit. And you have to ask, why is he not doing it? Why is Obama willingly holding us slave to a private banking cartel called the Federal Reserve? Now, when you look at that $65 trillion in debt that the federal government is in and is holding us all accountable to, most of that debt is money that never existed. It is simply the accumulation over time of that fictional money called compounded interest. And as I've said before many, many times, the problem with a debt-based currency system such as the Federal Reserve is, the instant it goes into operation, more money is owed to that central bank than is actually in existence. The use of such a system in a nation basically demands a predatory society. It must constantly be expanding and absorbing new money, not unlike the Roman Empire, either through increased borrowing from its own citizens and from overseas, or increased conquest. So that's where we are with the financial system. When we come back for the last segment of our show, we're going to be talking about Operation Wetback and a link between Presidents Hoover, Truman, and Eisenhower. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
Some have maxed out all their credit cards. Some are working two jobs and living in cars. Minimum wage won't pay for a roof, won't pay for a drink. If you gotta have proof, distract yourself, Mr. CEO. See how far 5:15 an hour will go. Take a part-time job at one of your stores. I bet you can't make it here anymore.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show here. Now, little trivia question. Maybe you can win at Trivial Pursuit or, you know, amaze your friends at the party. What do Presidents Hoover, Truman, and Eisenhower have in common? And the answer is that all three of these presidents had the wisdom and the political will during hard, difficult economic times to order the deportation from the United States of all illegal aliens who were a drain on the nation's resources and who were not paying any tax revenues into the system, and worse, were taking jobs away from Americans. Now, Hoover ordered the deportation because of the Depression. Truman ordered the deportation because he wanted to make sure that soldiers returning from World War II had jobs to come home to. And Eisenhower continued that same policy as president, as he started bringing home troops from other, like Korea. And Eisenhower called his Operation Wetback. Now, I've gotten a lot of hate mail from people saying that I'm a racist and that, you know, I'm betraying my Hispanic forebears, which is not accurate because Rivero is actually a Sephardic name. But here's the point. If people want to come to this country legally and go through the process, then I say welcome. But illegal aliens, by definition, are people who are here by virtue of a criminal action. And no, they don't have a right to be here. They don't have a right to be here. We as a nation do have a right, whenever possible, to protect our economy. And right now, our economy is in trouble, and Americans are unemployed. And look at California especially. What a huge population of illegal immigrants are in California. They are taking advantage of all the social services that are out there. Illegal aliens get to go to college for less money than the legal residents in California. And because these illegal aliens don't have social security numbers and they are not paying any taxes, it is money going out and not coming in. And California is in serious financial shape because of it. So at some point, we have got to stop worrying about, or let me rephrase that, at some point, our government has to stop worrying about taking care of Afghanistan and Pakistan and this stand and that stand and whatever, and our government has to come back and start taking care of the United States of America, because that is what we, the people, pay our taxes for. And right now, our government is failing utterly to do the job that we, the people, hired them to do. All right, we're going to go to the phones. We've got Mike in Georgia. Aloha, Mike. Welcome to the show. What's on your mind today?
Hello, Mr. Rivero. What I was wanting to comment on was you had a survey up where it was asking if people thought Congress should investigate the Bush-era torture. And I'm one of the people that voted no because I just found it kind of ludicrous that all the people, there was an article up in Harper's Magazine, you know, an interview with the lady that wrote a book on Bush's law breaking. Mm-hmm. And she was talking about how all the Congress people were, how many ranking Congress people were complicit in this, that had been briefed. And how satisfied are you with other investigations that Congress has performed, and you feel that we got any justice out of them?
Well, virtually none. But the reason I phrased that poll exactly the way I did is that CNN had a poll asking exactly the same thing and claimed that 2/3 of Americans said no, they didn't want any more investigation of the torture scandal. So I deliberately copied CNN's poll and put it on my site because the issue wasn't whether or not there should be an investigation. Personally, I think we should be at The Hague already with this scandal. But the point was that the corporate media is trying to use ginned-up public polls not to measure real public opinion, but to try and manufacture it in the hope that if Americans are told 2/3 of their neighbors don't want the torture scandal investigated, that that everybody will just say, well, okay, I guess that's what everybody wants, and I'll just go along with that. And it's an old, old scam of trying to use these manufactured polls to manufacture public opinion. And it won't work anymore because out here in the blogosphere, every time they put up one of these nonsense polls, we'll put up the identical one ourselves and we'll get some real numbers coming in. And the numbers are so far out of skew. I mean, you can't even claim it's a probability of error or anything like that when CNN is saying 2/3 of America do not want any investigation and our poll shows 98% do. It indicates, as I said, the issue isn't whether or not the torture scandal should be investigated by Congress. It was pointing attention to the fact that the corporate media is trying to use polls or pseudo-polls to try and manipulate the public awareness.
Well, and I agree. You know, I would like to have them investigated, but like I say, my feeling is it's like changing a baby's diaper, you know. Once it's soiled, you can't put that same diaper back on there and try to form the hygiene function because it's soiled, you know. And these Congress people, they just keep putting them back in. They've already committed crimes. You're not going to clean up any of this corruption by putting the same people back in there that are already compromised.
Well, I absolutely agree with you. You know, I, like I said, I think the proper place to be investigating this torture allegation is The Hague or a post-revolutionary tribunal. I'm definitely aware that if Congress is involved, we will never see either facts, truth, or justice.
I just wanted to point out why, because the other people I read who wrote into you, they basically said the same thing, too. It isn't that they don't want something done about this. They have absolutely no confidence in our government's ability to police itself up.
Well, that, you know, I absolutely agree, and I did read those comments. And as I said, the issue here wasn't whether or not there should be an investigation. I wanted to simply point out that CNN was attempting to manipulate public opinion with a very obviously fraudulent poll.
Well, one of the guys that wrote in there, he thought that the other 20-some percent were people who thought that Bush was all right or something, you know. And everybody I see that actually bothered to respond back in, no, they were just in agreement that Bush and Congress, they're all in it together.
Okay, well, you know, as I said, we'll be putting up some other polls, you know, on this issue. I know we will never get an honest investigation about anything from the U.S. Congress. You know, they're completely compromised. I think the number of really honest congressmen we've got can be counted on the fingers of one hand of a very accident-prone chef. So,
I kind of think it's going to be like the March of the Virgins they used to talk about when high school was a big joke that they'd talk about the town was going to have the March of the Virgins and then they had to call it off because one of them got sick and the other one marched by themselves.
I think
Ron Paul's going to be alone. If there's an investigation,
I'm hoping we can get Cynthia McKinney back in there. I know she's still on vacation writing her book. She has said she's going to come on the show with me as soon as she's back from wherever she is working on her book.
That would be excellent.
I'd love to get her back in Congress.
For her too.
Yeah, she's
okay. Thank
she's
you.
Modern day hero. All right, thanks an awful lot, Mike. Okay, coming down to the hour. My goodness, how it has just flown by. Again. This idea of odious debt, it is a real legal concept. Feel free to Google it. There's an article about it on the front of whatreallyhappened.com. But the bottom line is, this is a fundamental principle of international law. It has plenty of precedent. When the federal government of the United States collapses, the debts that they have incurred for these wars of aggression and these bailouts, which are not for the common good of the ordinary people of the nation, will not be enforceable against the people of the nation. They will be considered under international law as the personal debts of those governmental officials. Trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars. It's not our problem. We didn't agree to it. And you need to keep that in mind as you think about what's going to be happening in the coming months. All right, one last story before we're at the end of the show. As you know, and speaking of the torture scandal, President Obama has gone right to the United States Supreme Court to request that the more recent photos of the torture scandal be sealed away from the American public. I think it is a huge political mistake because it leaves the world free to imagine the absolute worst possible things that were happening in Abu Ghraib. And maybe the photos actually show it. And they just say, okay, we can't let this out. But here's the bottom line. Supreme Court Justice Ruth Ginsburg has granted the White House an additional 30 days to submit documents. So they're going to stall. They're going to put it off and say, oh, no, we're not hiding anything, but we're going to let them have a little more time to make their case. All right, so that's it for our show today. We'll be back tomorrow, 5 p.m. Central Time, here on the Genesis Communication Network. Please take a moment to Facebook, MySpace, Tweet, Fizzle, Dash, whatever it is to get the word out, get people listening to the show. Tell your friends about this idea of odious debt and how we, the people, may not be responsible for the debts of the federal government. Until tomorrow, aloha, America.